Autonomous Weapons with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to episode 130 of the Robots Podcast. My name is Jana, and in today's episode we talk to Peter Asaro about the campaign to stop killer robots. But first, let's hear what's been happening in robotics from Christine.
Thank you, Jana. Last week saw the 30th installment of the world's largest robotics conference, the International Conference on Robotics and Automation, or ICRA. This year's event was held in Karlsruhe, Germany, under the theme Anthropomatics, Technologies for Humans. Coined by a Karlsruhe informatics professor about 10 years ago, anthropomatics is the science of understanding and improving how humans and robots cooperate, interact, and coexist. Not surprisingly, many robots were busy mingling with people in the ICRA exhibition hall, and many more were presented during the 446 presentations in the conference's 7 parallel tracks. The conference was immediately followed by the annual ROS Developers Conference, ROSCON, in Stuttgart, Germany, adding another 36 presentations, not counting lightning talks, all focused on introducing new software tools and libraries, as well as sharing tips and tricks with the experts. To round off the busy week, ROS Industrial celebrated its 1-year anniversary with a video clip showcasing their software controlling robots by ABB, KUKA, FANUC, ADEPT, Universal Robots, and Yaskawa Motoman. For more on the robots and robot software presented at ICRA and ROSCON, and to have a look at the ROS Industrial Anniversary video, visit robohub.org.
Peter Asaro is Assistant Professor and Director of Graduate Programs at the School of Media Studies at the New School for Public Engagement in New York City. He also acts as the Vice Chancellor of the International Committee for Robot Arms Control. This committee seeks to spark a discussion about the control of autonomous military weapons. Our reporter Ajang Moon talked to Peter about a new international initiative called the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots.
On April 23rd in London, England, there was a news conference on the launch of a new campaign called the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. The campaign is an international coalition of non-governmental organizations working to ban fully autonomous weapons, otherwise known as killer robots. Some of the NGOs leading the campaign include Human Rights Watch and International Committee for Robot Arms Control, otherwise known as ICRAC, among several others. Joining us today to tell us more about killer robots and the launch of the campaign is Dr. Peter Asaro. Thank you for joining us, Peter.
That's great to be here.
So I understand that you just returned from the press conference in London and was part of the launch of the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. So to give the listeners a little bit of a background about the campaign and killer robots, can you tell us what killer robots are and how they're different from, let's say, drones used in the military that we have been hearing so much about lately?
Yeah, so, well, the thing that we're really concerned about with this campaign is autonomous weapon systems. And these are weapon systems that don't have any kind of human supervisory control and yet have the capability of killing people. And so basically they're killer robots. But there's a lot of things out there that are similar, kind of precursors in one sense, or other things that we're not really trying to ban necessarily. There's drones that we've all probably heard about, especially the ones that are used for targeted killings. And those are, in a sense, a robotic system. They're typically teleoperated. And more importantly, the lethal aspect of it, the firing of the weapon, is always under direct human supervision and control. But we're looking at technologies that in the near future could be capable of doing that completely independently and without direct human supervision and control. So we're really worried about that. And we're not really so worried about autonomous systems that might accidentally kill people, although we should be worried as far as how we regulate those and make sure that they're safe. But for the purposes of the campaign, we're really focusing on weapons. So we often call them autonomous weapons or autonomous weapon systems because they can also be distributed in many different locations. We kind of fixate robots as like one little unit of a robot. Or even like a drone, which has a ground station and satellite telecommunications links and all kinds of other network sort of elements to it.
I see. So you said that the campaign is mostly focused on the autonomous weapon systems. But how close are we to having fully autonomous robots in battlefields? Do we actually have any of them roaming around war zones today?
Well, I mean, there's a few precursors that, depending on how you define an autonomous robot, could qualify. And I think, you know, landmines are really, really dumb robots, in a sense. You know, they just have a switch and they go off. So they don't do a lot of sophisticated processing, or their sensor is very limited as well. But you could call those dumb robots. More sophisticated systems that we see are defensive systems like the Phalanx, a system on naval ships that shoots down incoming missiles with a Gatling gun and uses a radar tracking system. Other systems for missile defense are the Patriot missile system in the U.S. or the Iron Dome system in Israel. And these are kind of ground-based missile batteries that try to detect, again, incoming missiles that are traveling faster than the speed of sound and shoots them down automatically. To a certain extent, there is a supervisory sort of modes of control. Those are kind of fuzzy areas, or what Human Rights Watch in their report on losing humanity calls these precursor systems. And some of these, I think, you know, we're willing to have certain kinds of exceptions for these, you know, naval defense systems and things that really aren't designed to target humans anyway. But they show that the technology is sort of capable of, you know, operating autonomously. And so you can make these systems really bad already, right? Like good systems, sophisticated systems, those are going to be very difficult to make and take a lot of investment. And we're just worried that they're not going to work very well ever. And after they make all the investment, they're going to get used anyway.
Mm-hmm. So does the campaign have a very clear definition of, let's say, autonomous versus automated, and perhaps like the words offensive versus defensive, you know, what constitutes more defensive and offensive use of the weapons?
Yeah, well, that's a particularly tricky one that's been used historically. I'm not sure if that's really the best definition. We certainly haven't endorsed a particular definition like that, but we're aware of those concerns. So we want to be able to address those, and you know, those are the kinds of things that would be negotiated in an actual treaty. But in terms of autonomy and automation, I think it's really the way roboticists use autonomous is about navigating and being able to operate without direct human supervision and control. And that is fine for a lot of tasks as long as it's not lethal, right? But as soon as you get to the point of engaging a weapon system, that's where we're concerned. And specifically in the way the military operates, they call this targeting and engagement. So if you lock a weapon onto a target or aim a gun at somebody, like that's called targeting, and that's an aggressive act. You've selected somebody as a target, meaning that you're willing now to engage a weapon against them. And then the choice to actually use the weapon or engage or pull the trigger, as we might say. Those two steps, I think, are things that should not be automated. But, you know, there could be an autonomous flying system that has a human who decides what's targeted or engaged. And that's not a problem.
If we had an autonomous system that would actually look for somebody and follow a particular person through, and if a human person operator would actually pull that trigger, that system is actually a fair game. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, then it comes to what we call meaningful human supervision. So we have a human in control, but we have to make sure the human really knows what the system is up to. So if they don't really have any way of understanding how valid a target is, if it's a legal target or not, and the system just says, I found a legal target, can I shoot? And you just press a button to say yes, but you don't really know, then you don't really have meaningful supervision of that system. So you have to have enough information about what's really happening in the situation to be meaningfully supervising these systems.
So I am personally terrified with the idea of having autonomous robots, you know, being able to kill people or making that decision of life and death. Let me be a devil's advocate here. There can be some, you know, pros of having autonomous killing machines in military sense of things, right? I mean, you just mentioned the legal target aspect of things. You know, how are people to actually make a decision about what is legal target? Do we always make the right decisions? I mean, we hear about war crimes and stuff on the news all the time. Are robots actually going to be better, or do you think it's possible that robots are going to be better decision makers in military setting than people at all? Or is the campaign members actually opposed to that idea or argument?
I don't think it's impossible in theory that such systems could potentially be better. The problem is, if we look at what's really required to make these kinds of decisions and what humans do, and humans admittedly make a lot of mistakes, and they sometimes do so because of a lack of information, or they sometimes do so because of genuine ill will. But I still think that humans are much more capable of discriminating complicated visual targets. There's been advances in computer vision, but to be able to actually distinguish a human, not just in uniform, but, you know, an insurgent who might not be wearing a uniform, to identify somebody who's actually a hostile threat, is not even a behavioral signature necessarily. The laws of war are very cover a lot of different things. So you can surrender, and somebody who's surrendering is no longer a lawful target. Somebody who's injured is no longer a lawful target. Getting, you know, the visual processing of a robot to the point that they can tell whether somebody is injured is a long way off still. And that's just discrimination. There's all kinds of questions that are required under international law before you can use weapons against an enemy. And this includes proportionality decisions of judging. So you've identified a legitimate military target. Now you have to estimate the kind of damage that might be done by that target. You have to identify the civilian casualties that might result, and you have to weigh that against the value of a military objective, which changes from moment to moment and day to day, depending on military strategies, necessities, political interests, all sorts of very complicated things that require human-situated awareness that we're nowhere near approximating in machines, much less really understanding in humans.
So you just mentioned a few international laws pertaining to battlefields or war. Legally speaking, are autonomous robots in war zones actually illegal from what we the legal systems we have established today?
Yeah, well, there's nothing in the law that specifically says that they're illegal. So in that sense, they're not strictly prohibited. There are two articles to Additional Protocol 1 of the Geneva Convention, which calls for Article 36 calls for the review of weapons before they're used on the battlefield. So any new weapon system, and an autonomous weapon system would certainly count as such, has to be reviewed for whether it can legally meet the requirements of the rest of the Geneva Conventions, which means unless they're capable of doing these discrimination and proportionality distinctions and judgments, they would be illegal under current law. So they have to already pass a certain kind of requirement. But beyond that, I think there are implicit in Article 57, which requires precaution which is about precautionary measures in protecting civilians in combat, that actually says that you have to take care, you have to take every reasonable precaution, and it talks about planning and decision-making in the military. And, of course, they were clearly thinking about humans when they wrote this. So I argue that it was implicit in Article 57 that there is a requirement for humans to be making the decisions to use weapons. But it's not really explicit. And so I think what's motivating me in this campaign to stop killer robots is really to establish in international law an explicit prohibition against this that could then be a moral standard as well. And I think this is really crucial because it goes beyond this question of just, well, maybe a robot will kill fewer people or maybe it won't. And all these are empirical questions and very difficult to measure. Because we don't really understand what happens in war very well anyway, and it's very hard to count casualties and things like that. But beyond that, I think allowing a machine to decide who lives and who dies is a big line to cross that we really sort of jeopardizes human rights in a fundamental way to say that an automatic system, an automated machine, an autonomous robot, however you want to describe it, is authorized to take human lives based on its own programming. And I think, you know, as humans, sometimes, you know, self-defense allows us to override the human rights of others in our protection of ourselves. So you can kill somebody else in self-defense because your rights override theirs in that case. But a robot doesn't really have that, and I don't think that's something we can delegate to a robot, this power of deciding when somebody can be killed. I think that's just a very dangerous road to go down.
Is there any data on how many countries countries are actually actively doing research in this kind of autonomous weapons systems?
Not really. So we do know that there are now 70 countries who have drone technology, which is a closely related technology. And I think aerial combat aerial combat vehicles are really at the forefront of a lot of the technological development of these systems. So that's already a big number. There are a handful of countries in the world that have armed aerial drones, UAVs, drones, things like that. So how many might be working? Most of the public programs on autonomous drones, we know there's a handful of those that are so far not armed, or at least they're not being demonstrated or described as being armed, but look certainly capable of being armed. So it's beyond that, it gets pretty secretive, exactly what's being developed in labs these days.
I understand that some of the NGOs involved in this campaign to stop killer robots have also worked on banning other types of military technologies, including anti-personnel landmines that we've discussed briefly. What do you think is the key difference there between the existing international treaties of these other military technologies and the one that the campaign is trying to establish today?
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of experience in the campaign. We got Jody Williams from the Nobel Women's Initiative. She won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1995 for the banning of anti-personnel landmines. We also have a bunch of the people who are responsible for the cluster munitions ban a few years ago. And I think in both cases, you see a similarity to our current work, which is a humanitarian basis for arms control, really looking at weapons that are killing and have the potential to kill indiscriminately and pose a severe threat to civilians in combat. So in terms of getting a treaty We have, you know, the experience that they've already acquired in getting two major treaties through. And I think we're following a very similar process in terms of really going to the world community and trying to get people to convince their governments to come and join an international treaty and using that as a mechanism to establish an international norm that then applies to all nations. And I think that's also crucial because there's a few countries that might be leading in the technology, like the United States and some others, and they don't necessarily want to develop the technology for its own sake. They're also concerned that if they don't, other countries might. So, you know, you have the whole sort of situation of an arms race, and one way to stop an arms race is to have a treaty that says you can never use the weapon, and that takes away a lot of the incentive to start building them, even if you, you know, just because you think the other guy is going to build it first.
It sounds like an international treaty of that size would involve the United Nations. Is the United Nations involved in this at all, or are they taking any actions around this issue?
There has been some movement. The UN Special Rapporteur for Extrajudicial Execution, Philip Alston, has called for some action on this in the past. The UN General Assembly hasn't responded to that. There's some other interest and discussion around it. It's probably going to be taken up as a larger issue at some point. There are a variety of international bodies that we are addressing at this stage in order to try to raise awareness and get some attention on this issue. And to go back to your previous question about differences to the cluster munitions and landmine bans, in this case, we're really trying for something that's a preemptive ban. So this is a weapon that largely isn't being used yet. And we hope it will never be used. And so that's why we want to move now, because we think it's going to be much harder to get a ban once this weapon is being used widely, and it'll be causing a great deal of suffering at that point. And there are some precedents for that, the best example being blinding lasers, which were really largely banned before they were ever used in any kind of large-scale military operations.
I see. So it sounds to me that, you know, having autonomous weapons could be just simply dangerous, too dangerous and too risky. But was there anybody actually, you know, from the public opposing the campaign, or how was the initial response from the public about the campaign itself?
I think most of the public is behind it. Of course, they have the same questions you have, and we're happy to talk about the issue and answer their questions. I think there are some people who think, you know, that maybe technology can fix all of our problems, and they really, you know, wishfully think that robots are going to solve a lot of the problems of warfare in terms of reducing casualties and things like that. And while I think that's a noble ambition, I think it's unrealistic from a technological perspective. And I know that you've worked with a lot of robots, including some autonomous robots, and they can be pretty unpredictable. And the idea of entrusting, you know, people's lives to these robots, or really allowing these pre-programmed robots to, you know, decide who lives and dies, is just far too risky for us to accept.
A lot of our listeners actually are roboticists themselves. Does the campaign have any recommendations or a key message, if you will, to our listeners regarding people who are working on robotic weapons or developing them?
Yeah, so my committee, the International Committee for Robot Arms Control, has a scientist's letter that we're asking scientists and engineers to go and sign, saying that you support a ban on fully autonomous lethal robots. You can go to icrac.net, that's icrac.net, and click on the little tab that says Scientists Call, and you'll be able to add your name to that list. We've got about 200 scientists who've signed it so far, including Jeffrey Hinton, one of the pioneers of the neural network, is on the list. And we're an organization of scientists and engineers and experts who, you know, we understand this technology and we all love robots. We just want to make sure that they don't kill anybody.
Let's talk about iCrack a little bit. What was your motivation for starting this organization? Is that just perfectly in line with the campaign itself?
Pretty much. I mean, we formed the committee in 2009, and at that time, nobody was really talking about this issue at all. And we saw that there were a lot of companies developing these technologies, and the Pentagon was issuing these, you know, roadmaps for the future that outlined all these autonomous lethal systems. And there was no discussion going on at all. So we really formed around the idea of motivating discussion and getting people involved and aware of the issue and really trying to move towards some mode of regulating or controlling these. I think at that time we thought it was pretty ambitious to try to do an international comprehensive ban. Now, however, we've got a very significant group of NGOs behind us, and I think we might actually achieve that.
That sounds really awesome. And it's only been about 4 years, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've mentioned how scientists or roboticists can help out in this cause, but for the podcast listeners who are not necessarily roboticists or scientists, who would also like to support the campaign, is there something that people can do to help, or anyone in general can support the campaign?
Well, I would recommend you go to the campaign website, which is stopkillerrobots.org, and you can find out more there. They also have a Facebook page, and they have a Twitter, and I think I sent those to you. You can share those with the audience on,
for sure,
on the podcast. And there's, I think the best thing is to follow the Twitter stream and the social media are going to have a lot of updates. There's a lot of different things going on, and the biggest thing is to inform yourself, inform your friends, and let your elected leaders know that you support a campaign to stop killer robots, and that, you know, your country should participate. And there'll be information forthcoming in the coming months on, you know, how to get involved in national organizations or start one yourself.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That sounds wonderful. We look forward to hearing more about the call to actions from you and iCrack, as well as the campaign to stop killer robots. Well, thank you very much for your time, Peter, and we hope to hear more.
Great. Thank you, Aiden.
And that's the end of today's episode. If you're interested in learning more about the campaign to stop killer robots, there's further information and links on our website at robotspodcast.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Autonomous Weapons with Robots. Podcast for news and views on robotics.